The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now, I'm looking forward to this bit because Pete the Vet is with us. Ireland's most famous vet, Pete. Would you agree with that?
I don't know at all.
And Pete and I have known each other over the years. And in fact, Pete's daughter did immunology.
She did. And she's now a professional science communicator at UCD and loving her work.
Superb.
Yes.
Isn't that great? Yeah. Now, Pete, we've got a lot to talk about. And remember, you can text in your questions to Pete. It's 53106 or on WhatsApp 087-1400-106. And we're going to come on to some of the questions shortly. But Pete, the XL bully question is in the news again. I know you've been speaking about this in the past and,
yes,
and you've got quite a strong opinion about it.
Yes, it's very much in the news because yesterday, just before the doll went into recess, Heather Humphreys, the Social Protection Minister, she announced that a decision has finally been made to ban XL bullies in Ireland. And this is following what's happened in the UK.
Yep.
And from October the 1st, just in a few months away, it'll be illegal to breed, to sell, to rehome or to import XL bullies. And then to follow on from that, from next February, if you have an XL bully, you will have to have it neutered and you will have to have it licensed specifically as an XL bully. And if you don't do that, then the dog will have to be euthanized, and you as an owner will be fined and possibly even sent to jail. So it's a very, very serious steps against this particular breed.
Why can't it happen overnight? Like, why is it taking so long for these dates, October and February, to kick in? Like for example, let's say you get attacked in December, you know, this kind of thing. Why does it take so much time? Do we know? Is the legal process?
First thing I'd say, Luke, is I disagree with the ban.
Anyway, I do.
And the reason I disagree with it is because the reason they've given it a bit of time, I suppose, is because it does take time to put in place the structures to enforce that.
Right.
And that's one of my main concerns, is that it's very easy to say banned. It's much more difficult to make that happen in real life. And I've written a piece in the Independent newspaper website today about this because I feel so strongly about it. We already are very bad in this country at enforcing dog-related law. For example, you're meant to have a dog license. Probably only one in three people actually have dog licenses because it's not enforced. So there is a network of dog wardens in this country, but there's not nearly enough. The government has previously promised they would introduce more dog wardens, and that certainly would be a help. As well as that, when it comes down to it, the issue isn't just that XL bullies. It's not that. The issue is that people want to have large, muscular, powerful dogs. That's the real issue. And banning one breed, banning the current breed of favour for people who want those dogs, all it's going to do is it's going to kick the problem down the road. In 5 years' time, there'll be far more canny corsos, bull mastiffs, goodness only knows what, big muscular dogs imported from other countries of a slightly different breed. And you'll just have to then ban them as well. And it's just like, it's the wrong way to do it. What we should be doing is educating people about the right way to care for these big, strong dogs, educating people about the potential risks, and perhaps taking steps to ensure that they are educated, like insist that they have dog training certificates or something, demonstration that people who own these dogs understand what's going on and what can go wrong. That's the approach that should be taken rather than just a simple knee-jerk ban. Complex problems like this, they don't have simple solutions. They involve complex solutions. And by the way, what we also need is more funding for animal rescues. As I say in the article I wrote, the Irish government gives 20 million a year to the niche sport, so-called sport, of greyhound racing, 20 million, and they give just 6 million a year to all the people who support animal welfare in Ireland, charities like the ISPCA, charities that do the work of looking after animals that get into trouble. So that proportion is way wrong. It should be reversed.
Right.
6 million for greyhounds, 20 million for animal welfare. Then we'd be talking sense.
Sure. I think you made a very interesting point that I wasn't aware of. My assumption was XLs are especially aggressive, and that's why they need to be treated differently. That's not the case necessarily, is it?
Not necessarily at all. No. I know, and one of the real challenges now that we're facing is that vets across the country are going to be asked to euthanize perfectly healthy, perfectly good-natured XL bullies because they're banned. And that's, it's a really, really difficult area.
Isn't it? Yeah, I think there was a phrase last night in the news, the deed, not the breed, someone said. In other words, it's not really the dog.
I'd much rather be bitten by a Chihuahua than an XL bully. Yeah. Like, there's no doubt there's...
The jaws are a bit stronger in the XL.
They're massive, muscular animals, and some of them do behave very badly indeed. And we've seen the consequences of that. But you can't just generalise that means that they're all very bad and dangerous. It's just definitely not the case.
So you think it should be more to do with helping owners to train them properly, and an outright ban is a big mistake, and proper licensing, and that seems to be a better way to go about it.
Well, I think that... it certainly should be a much broader response than simply a ban. Now, I have to hope that the government is sensible and that they will indeed follow up that announcement of the ban with a lot of resources to make sure that the other aspects I've talked about are also brought into play. But sure, doors go on to recess, so I don't know how much is going to happen.
Do you think it's a bit political? In other words, it's in the news and they got to do something. Otherwise, the politicians are going to get blamed.
Listen, there's no doubt that probably 80% of the listeners think, yes, they're banned. There's no doubt that it's a politically popular decision, but that doesn't mean that it's the right decision.
Or that'll work by the sounds of things necessarily.
Exactly. Right. What we want is, I mean, they banned pit bulls, you see, in England like 30 years ago, and all that happened was the American XL bullies emerged.
That's
the evidence that it doesn't work.
Switch to something else. We better move on. It's a fascinating topic. Yeah. Now, loads of questions have come in. So the first one is, my 3-year-old Labrador came home with a tick on his neck last week. I tried to make it fall off with a lighted cigarette, but it was not easy, and I think I made a mess of it, although I did manage to remove it. What should I do if another one turns up? That's from James in Drogheda.
Yeah, ticks are a common seasonal problem for dogs and indeed for people. And the old myth that you can use a lighted cigarette to get to fall off is nonsense and should not be done. The best way to remove a tick is to use something called a tick hook, which is especially designed. It's like a little piece of plastic, really, a little plastic stick with a hook at one end. You put it over the head of the tick and you twist it around, and the tick just comes off easily. And crucially, the head of the tick is removed. And if the head of the tick stays in there, that can end up getting infected and causing a big immune reaction and redness and soreness and so on. So using a tick hook to remove a tick is the first thing that's important. Second thing is that that's fine if your dog gets an occasional tick, but if your dog is regularly coming back into your house with ticks on them, then what you should do is use a monthly tablet or a 3-monthly tablet. There's a number of products available that will prevent ticks completely from attaching to your dog, and they work really well. So you should talk to your vet about that if that's the issue. The big concern I have whenever there are ticks around is the risk of Lyme disease. Now, that does happen in dogs, although it's very rare. It is very common in humans and very challenging, controversial disease in humans because, as you'll know, the immune system reacts over strongly perhaps to the bug that causes Lyme disease, and people can be left debilitated for months and for years. So preventing Lyme disease by making sure that you don't expose yourself to ticks, and if you do feel unwell at all after being bitten by a tick, seeing your doctor very promptly, these are really important things people should be aware of.
Right. Very good. Are ticks the big problem then in pets? I mean,
they're very common in pets, yes. Right.
Now, the next one, I have a Scottish Terrier and the two of us used to exercise a lot, which was good for both of us. He's grown older now and is less keen to run, so we just dawdle along. But myself have put on weight as a result. Is there any way you can get an old dog not to learn new tricks, but to be more energetic? That's Damien from Greystones.
Damien, really, I think this is about self-discipline. You know, you can't use an old dog as an excuse for you putting on weight. Come on, man. You've got to pull out the stops and you know, just man up.
Yeah.
As far as your dog's concerned, I think exercise is great for older dogs. And what you need to realize is that they don't need to be running along like sub 4-minute kilometers, you know. Dogs just like getting out and about. I even see people taking dogs out in push chairs, and you might think, well, what's the sense in that? They're not getting any exercise. But it's not just the physical exercise, you see. They love the scents and smells, and they love sounds, and they love just looking at the world around them. Yeah. And that gives dogs great satisfaction. So just because your old Scottish Terrier isn't like charging along at speed doesn't mean that he doesn't like being taken out.
And he's not benefiting from it either, by the way, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very good. Now remember, you can text in any questions for Pete, 53106, or WhatsApp us on 087-1400-106. Now, another one. I have a question about teething puppies and biting. They're obviously in pain and tend to nip, but what's the best way to let them know that they can't do that? Some say to ignore and not engage. Others say a strong reaction like, oh no, and others say time out. What's the advice on this?
Yeah, well, I think there's two aspects to this. The first thing is teething. And I think it's a bit of a myth that teething is painful and that that animals chew to ease the pain of teething. I'm not sure there's evidence there that teething is painful. I think it's a very natural process for teeth to emerge in the mouth, and it not necessarily is something which causes them to have discomfort hugely. But at the same time, puppies do have a strong urge to chew, as do dogs. They love chewing. It's part of being a dog, is grabbing something and giving it a good old gnaw, and they like that. And I would encourage people to make sure that they provide safe items for their dog to chew. Things like those red rubber Kongs that you can stuff them with food, and that you can put them in the deep freeze, and then dogs can chew them for a long time afterwards and get great pleasure from doing that. And those are generally safer than using things like bones. Things like bones, much as they may seem natural, they can be so hard that dogs break their teeth on them. So we're a bit concerned about those. Right. Anyway, that's the chewing thing. The biting thing, the play biting thing, is something different. And that is that puppies, again, they're learning to engage with the world socially, and they do that, but they can't use their hands, so they use their mouths. And so what you need to teach puppies is that you need to teach them something called bite inhibition. And that means that that they don't use their mouth to hurt by biting too hard. And there are two ways of doing that, as the listener mentioned. The first way is perhaps to do what a female dog would do with her puppies. If they bite her, she'll just turn to them and go, "Whoa!" A single snap, not hurting them at all, but giving them a little bit of a fright. So I think there's an element of that does make sense in dog training. But the other aspect is to realize that behavior that is ignored tends to decline, whereas behavior that's rewarded tends to increase. And if you react to your dog in a puppy by going, "Oh, now stop doing that," and you pet them as you say that, that actually is a reward. Mm. Okay, so don't do that. Much better to ignore. And so I've heard it said for parents to instruct their children that if their puppy does get a bit over engaging with the child, to be like a tree. In other words, just to stand there, hands by the side, looking ahead, and completely ignore the puppy. And the puppies will then just stop doing that behaviour.
Very good. Now, texts are coming in. Great. You have three or four of them here. Could you ask Pete if cats mourn? As my 14-year-old cat died, his brother's behaviour has changed since he died. He seems listless and just sits alone in the garden all day. Could there something be wrong? Do pets mourn, Peter?
Definitely. Very sadly, they do, yeah. I mean, pets are very social creatures. The connection of a relationship with their housemates is a big part of their lives. And so it's very common for animals to be deeply affected. Most often, it's sad to contemplate this, but no action is needed, because most commonly they gradually come to terms with this and life moves on. Yeah. Exceptionally, an animal might be so badly affected that you might need to consider going to your vet to talk to the vet about medication. Similar to antidepressants.
Is that right? You can give your pet antidepressants if need be.
You have to be careful about choosing the cases. It has to be done under professional supervision, obviously. But there are times when that can be helpful. But the other thing I'd say is that occasionally the stress of an emotional situation like that can lead to underlying illnesses coming to the fore, because when an animal's stressed, their immune system is a little bit depressed as well by the stress, and that then can mean that something that's been hidden before can come to the fore. So if an animal seems unwell in any way, it would make sense to go to the vet and get them checked out.
Right. Mm. Another text. Forgive me for this if you've been asked this before, Pete, but my mother has a Labrador and she refuses to put him out at night. She has a bed in the garage for him, but she refuses, saying he should be in at night. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's a very individual kind of situation. There's a tradition, I think, in Ireland of dogs sleeping in outhouses. Okay. And sometimes that's fine. In the summer months, like just now, if a dog is used to sleeping in an outhouse or a garage, it's got a
cozy beds in there. There's nothing wrong with that at all. On the other hand, there are situations where people heartlessly throw their cherished, pampered pets out into the coldness and dampness of Irish winter, and the animals don't have anywhere comfortable to go, and it's clearly completely wrong.
Right.
So there's a balance between those two, and I think you just have to use common sense and cop on working out what's right.
As
and
ever, common probably, sense helps, I think, in this
Common
situation.
Sense is really good. And also, by the way, there is a little bit of a trend towards humanising our pets these days. And there's some truth in this, because animals are indeed non-human persons. They're sentient creatures just like ourselves, and they do, you know, they're very aware of things like personal comfort and so on.
Right.
So the right answer to a situation like that entirely depends on the specifics of the situation.
Right, another one. They're coming in thick and fast, Pete. You're very popular this morning. We've got a 1.5-year-old from a family member who was not fully house trained. This has never been an issue with previous dogs. He's now 2 and still weeing in the house. Any advice on how to stop a 2-year-old? Is it too late to house train them?
It's never too late to house train a dog. First thing I'd say is, if he's a male, then get him castrated. Male hormones significantly contribute to dogs wanting to mark their territory by piddling. So that's the first thing to do. Right. Second thing to do is, if it hasn't been done before, find out about crate training a dog. And that basically means that we know that dogs don't like to pee in their immediate environment, in their den. The strong instinct not to contaminate the den. So if you can find them to a smaller area, like a metal cage or a crate, and then only let them out of that when they're being very closely supervised, or indeed taken straight outside, then that is the best way to house train a dog.
Very good. We have time for one more. How often should I worm my dog? My vet says once a month, but I think he just wants to sell me more worming tablets. Vets would never do that, would they? He wants to sell me more worming tablets to make money out of me. From Donna in town.
Such a cynical person. Well, listen, the worm that we worry about most these days is something called lungworm. Because what lungworm does is it, dogs pick it up by eating slugs and snails and frogs. And what it does is the worm goes into the lungs and it sits there. But more importantly, it produces anticoagulants which stop the blood from clotting. And we see, in our practice, we see about one dog a year dying of an unexpected brain hemorrhage. And on autopsy, they found to have had lungworm. So the only way you can prevent that, if your dog eats slugs, snails and frogs, or indeed if your dog has free access to a garden, because they probably will do that if they have free access to a garden, the only way you can prevent that is by using a once monthly treatment, using a specific wormer, not just any old wormer, a specific wormer that includes lungworm.
Right.
And if everybody did that, we wouldn't see these deaths of dogs that we continue to see. So that is important. And, you know, your vet is absolutely right about that.
Yeah. Very good. Pete, thanks ever so much, as usual, for coming in. Pete Wedderburn there, Pete the vet.
Thank you, Luke.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.